Magic Without Fears, Hermetic Podcast. I'm your host, Frater RC. For more and exclusive episodes, visit magicwithoutfears.com. Thank you for your support. Magic Without Fears, Hermetic Podcast. I'm your host, Frater RC. For more and exclusive episodes, visit magicwithoutfears.com. Thank you for your support. Magic Without Fears, Hermetic Podcast. I'm your host, Frater RC. For more and exclusive episodes, visit magicwithoutfears.com. Thank you for your support.
All right, let's do this.
We're live. How's it going, man? Oh, my friend wants to say hi.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Joshy.
I love you. Oh, my God.
I'm the Canada Bear. Wow.
Are you okay?
Wow. Get that wet ass pussy. Wow.
Oh my God. Are you all right, man?
Dude, I'm very, very well. Very well.
All right, cool.
I got my magic hat. Mama said it would take me anywhere.
Yeah, I can imagine that and the bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe that you just wet ass pussied me with a stuffed bear. It is always a pleasure to be on
Magic Without Fears with
Magic Without Fears, the Golden Dawn side of the fence.
it's there's not many Golden Dawn sides of the fence, are there? Really? Not really.
No, but there's like the ceremonial magic group of people that are all into Kabbalah and the QBL and that side of the occulture that knows how to trace stars really well and does a lot of astral magic and
right. Well, that's sort of the tradition I'm from, indeed. Yeah. I had like a 4-hour talk with Scotland the other day about this. And crazy stuff you get to learn when you talk to other like people on the level, because we all they know a lot, like usually as much, if not a little bit more than you do, even. There's people on that level. And my buddy in Scotland, like, did you know the first Masonic Lodge opened actually in 1498? In Scotland.
I did not know that.
That's old.
Is that why they call it the Scottish Rite?
No, that's a different thing. So yeah. Wow. Hopefully he'll come on the podcast and we'll talk Freemasonry.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to learn more of it. It's not my passion, but I love what I do learn.
Yeah. Yeah, you've always had a passion for learning.
So I think we all do. You're getting more into archery, is that the rumor?
That's the rumor, yeah. So
tell us about that, because I called you the other day, or I messaged you the other day, because I had a dream about you, And I was like, yeah. I had a dream about you. And you're like, I'm taken, bro. And I said, no, in the dream I asked, are you moving to Seattle? And you said like, yes, I think, but that part's fuzzy. But I woke up and I was like, that's absurd, because I know that you don't live there, and why would you ever? But I guess maybe my subconscious knew because of things I had seen without paying attention. So there, either way, you know.
Something like that. Yeah.
That's the big news though. You're moving to Seattle.
Yeah. So I'm gonna be moving to Seattle probably mid-summer this year, June, July. I'm gonna be heading out west to the Pacific Northwest to spend time with my new girlfriend, Nicole, who I'm dating now. I have had the good fortune of dating some of the most beautiful and most intelligent and most powerful women in the occult. And I really think that I should teach a class on it.
That is not where I thought you were going to go with that. I thought you'd go the sincere route, but there you are.
I am being quite sincere, dude.
Yeah, I know. That's the scary part.
I have an outline for the course already set up.
Oh Lord, saints preserve
us. The love magic of the seven spheres.
Oh my God.
But yeah, you're
going to sell a lot of that.
I've managed to
just make sure to do a chapter like Don Craig's Modern Magic. At least one. Come on, I want diagrams.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No one knows what we're talking about. Dude, that shocked me at 14. That was like not so shocking because I had the Tantra element and the Maharishi upbringing.
Oh.
But it was still intense to read so much of that stuff, even though my mom had books, like tons of sex books on Tantra all over the house growing up.
Right. Yeah. My dad was I grew up in this charismatic Christian family, but my dad was a reflexologist. So he had a lot of books on Taoism. And one of them was the Tao of health, sex, and longevity. And like a good half that book is like the Yellow Emperor's pillow book. And I was like, so I'm sitting there looking at the Chinese version of the Kama Sutra at like 16 years old thinking, you know, all kinds of wonderful
things. What's funny is when you see those books and then you hear about shit from guys in your high school class or haven't helped you grade school class, it doesn't really line up. Right, you're like, and as you breathe in, she breathes out, and as she breathes out, and then at school, you're like, yo, I violated her like a parking meter, as one of my friends delightfully said one day in grade 10. It's a pretty good line, actually. I violated her like a parking meter. It was funny, though. I thought he was sort of a gross dude, you know, one of those gross high school sex dudes.
Yeah, I don't think that one would go over so well.
His name was Jonathan Roth, John Roth. Funny character, man. He loved speed and Tool.
And now, a word from our sponsors. While we cannot control whether any ads get put in the spots allocated, we thank you for listening to those that do, since they help keep this project alive. You can also get ad-free content and bonus content and videos and a private webpage by subscribing exclusively to magicwithoutfears.com for only a couple dollars a week, or $6 a month, or $50 for the year. It helps a lot, plus you get emails about other exclusive things. Thank you very much.
I can understand Tool, but
yeah, I mean, that's about it. Yeah.
So yeah,
a love course. You're serious.
Eventually, yeah. I'm not there yet, but yeah, I think it's very fascinating. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, what is it about? Why are you only comfortable when you're in a relationship, you know, because like I'm a serial monogamist, as you know.
You're one of those people who doesn't usually be single for long. You don't have long
to be single.
No, yeah,
but the reason is because I've embraced that aspect of my Taurian nature and being ruled by Venus. So that's what my story is, and I'm gonna stick with that story until such a time as I have to change it. So
astrology can give us some wonderful excuses. I love it.
Yeah, it's fabulous. The more I learn about astrology, the more I realize that it's never a good time to do anything. So
okay, I'm gonna confess something to you that is like so not trendy right now. I generally don't care much about planetary hours. I will use them, but in my experience, it hasn't made that much of a difference.
Oh my gosh, bite your tongue.
I know, right? Like that's actually news, like for me to say that. But it's just I haven't noticed a drastic difference. Maybe not more than just my intentionality of making that hour magical. And trust me, I get the astrology parts of it. Like I really do.
What does the Golden Dawn teach about why we do astrological hours? Like why do we do planetary hours?
It's the standard stuff. There's only one reason, as far as I can tell, across all the Western systems. Do you know of multiple versions of why?
No, I don't. Just don't know what you've learned.
It's governed by that being, so it's the favorable time, you know, maybe the veil's thinner.
Yeah, it's about the way I learned it was communications are clearer in that hour, mm-hmm. because it's got an affinity with the planet, and it's based on, I mean, the days of the week are all man-made, right? I mean, it's not like when you're born, you're given a list of days that you know, maybe the first person was definitely not given that. I mean,
yeah.
We get it from our parents, but it's a societal construct. I mean, every culture has their own names for the days of the week. And we agree that there's seven because it's convenient for business. But
well, you know, as much as I am, would love to just, say, look, let's remember these are all, you know, conceptual constructs and, you know, mm-hmm. rely on Platonic metaphysics, like the metaphysics of presence, like nominalism, essentialism, that sort of thing, right? But then when you look at some crazy shit like crop circles, geometry, Pythagoras, and like fractals, you start to realize there are these numerical patterns. And that's when it's whoa, you know, our symbols don't come from nothing. They're just sometimes very multidimensional.
Yeah, it's revealing the patterns that are underlying the apparent chaos of our existence.
Did you know that people who go into crop circles based on three patterns feel well and healthy, and ones who go into four or five or eight patterns get really sick?
I did not know that.
What's weird about that is those shape patterns and vibrations line up with my experiences in DMT land.
Oh, okay.
That's what I find really curious about that.
I have not had any DMT experiences yet.
Well, you're going to be a 2-hour drive away pretty soon, Vancouver to Seattle.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to them lifting the COVID restrictions so I can actually get some decent cigars and visit some friends.
Yeah, nice. I mean, yeah, we can leave Canada, but on the way back, we have to spend 3 days in hotel jail.
Yeah, that's not like so bad.
$2,000, $3,000.
That's not so bad.
They starve you.
They starve you?
Oh, yeah. You get like a piece of bread and a banana a day to eat.
Are you kidding?
No. No. And one woman just got raped. And you're just a prisoner in a shitty jail that you have to pay for.
How about you don't leave? Why don't we wait until after the restrictions are lifted?
Yeah, and then, that's the plan.
Yeah, never mind. Oh, man.
How's things with the book, the recent book release?
Oh, you know what?
You getting lots of feedback?
I have not gotten a lot of feedback, no. People have bought it. I am trying to do a course on it. I've got a course put together for it. Getting that launched took me about 9 months. I thought it was going to take me about 2 weeks. So everything is like super delayed. You know, there's something about this material world that's just... it just drags ass, you know. It just takes fucking forever to get anything done, and everything takes a lot longer than I expected. So it I'm like 9 months behind schedule with where I wanted to be with the book release and the classes and Academia Hermetica. You keep asking me what's going on with Academia Hermetica. Well, and the at the end of the day, what's going on with it is I have a list of things I'm supposed to be doing with it that I haven't gotten to yet. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger, and money has made it take a backseat to other endeavors. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely understand all of that and the limitations of our time and how hard it is to, you know, I look forward to having spaces and, you know, we can't actually go see friends legally. So like, mm-hmm. you know, my film friends, I can't go see them. And that's too bad because they have a mansion with the pool table and shit like that. But we're not even allowed to go to a friend's house. And who knows when that'll last till. It's pretty unending.
Yeah. Well, it's not like you haven't spent a lot of time in a sequestered vault before. So, I mean, you're used to quarantines, right?
I'm highly, yeah, I'm functional in the astral plane. You sort of have to be at a certain point when you're spending such long periods of time, you know. So I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm fascinated by the contrast of focus on you know, physical ritual tools and their presence versus astral realities and abilities. I find it like the two pillars, force and form, and they live in tension, and that's how they work.
Well, that's, I mean, so I don't have a rich tradition of astral magic.
No.
You know, I mean, and I've read down Michael Craig, and I but I never did like all the Israel Regardier work. I never done all the Golden Dawn stuff. And my AA training that was, you know, it's Crowley's ripoff version of the Golden Dawn. It's
hey, he brought in some great stuff, actually, in my opinion.
Yeah, I have no complaints about it, but it's I never got that far in it, you know. I was the Imperator, but as you know, it's a title.
Imperator, where sort of.
I mean, you don't get to really tell anybody what to do. You can tell them what to do, but this, especially in a Thelemic order, they don't do it.
Oh, dude, you know, no,
they're gonna do what they will anyway.
That's totally so Imperators are totally different in like. Yeah, man. No, in the Golden Dawn, we're a lot more militant and order following. Like, Imperators tell everyone what to do. Like, there was weeks, on end where it's like, look, you're only going to sleep 15 minutes a night for the next week. It's like, yeah, of course.
You know? See, I could tell them that, but we're Thelemites, and
you're so rebellious. It's your undoing.
It's not rebellious. It's knowing your Pugnacious. True will.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your true will? Not to sleep for 15 minutes tonight. Fuck that. I'm not your.
Well, that's not a bad thing that Crowley brought into it, you know, because you can see some of these Golden Dawn orders get culty, and that's a bad tendency, right? Like that would be nice to find ways harder to have happen.
It would have been nice if they would have listened.
Who?
I mean. The AA to me when I was a boss. I was the boss for like a minute. I mean, the Imperator. When I was Imperator, let me tell you, I issued edicts and
it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. See, that's just it.
That's what sort of makes it noble in my eyes, is it's a huge commitment and it pushes you past your limits. And that's good on every level.
Yeah. And you... So I joke around about authority a lot, you know, but I've had to.
Cheers to that.
But I mean, I've had to accept the fact that, you know, with reputation comes responsibility, and people are going to listen to what I say, and I have to weigh my words more carefully than I used to, you know, because more people are going to listen to it and think that they should or shouldn't do what I say because I. You know what I mean? You know, like with the Imperator comes a certain, what's the word? Agator, the leadership aspect of the mantle, the mantle of authority. It comes with a certain, people do listen to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's not just a spiritual title. It's not just a office that you fill, and it's not just a culty function or role. It changes who you are when you become an Imperator, and it, like you said, it pushes the limits of where you're at, and
yeah, it sort of sucks.
Comfortable with, yeah, it does. Yeah. We should bitch about the privilege that we have.
The Imperators Club is one big bitch fest.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
You know,
it's not our fault though.
You're the one who has to make rulings. Like I expelled a lot of people during my time. It wasn't fun. Oh my god, dude, people, yeah. And like it was extra hard because I was like, you know, 20 to 23 in those crucial years. it's very hard for someone who's like 40, 50, 60 to listen to you. You know, but
why
did they put
you in charge at such a young age?
Well, it was military promotion. Martin left. Now he runs Zaleski's order. And then Marcel left to get married. And that was me that was left. So I had to, out of the portals, like the 10 or 12 portals we had, get two of them trained up to be in the second order and get them initiated, which takes like a year to get two of them through because it's such a massive process, you know, everyone flies down to LA and, you know, that's 4 days right there. And then they have to spend another 2-3 weeks training just there with the TDL.
You guys do so much work. You know, I really do. I mean, the Golden Dawn ought to be.
That's why I say I was lucky. Like I was lucky. That's what I wanted. It's what I wanted.
Yeah. Well, you came out of it knowing a lot more than I do. That's for sure. You know, we have these conversations and you bring up.
It was fun and traumatic, you know.
It's fun and dramatic. I learned so much.
So much. Well, like it's the little occasional dramas and gossips that stick out that people remember. But you know, you got most of the iceberg submerged. Like most of it's just, you know, doing work, classes, rituals, initiations, upkeep, social nights, Halloween parties. We did monthly major ceremonies that would take 20 hours of planning. Put in a few hundred dollars and then do a 3-4 hour ritual and have a potluck. Like we did that every single month, once a month, plus, you know, neophyte initiation a month, elemental initiation for that month. And
And you guys don't hang out and drink afterwards.
Because afterwards is 3 a.m. Yeah. Because after a regular grade class that's 5 days a week, that's 10:30 to midnight. You're either studying all night or people are signed into two different temples 24/7 too. There's people who come at 4 or 5 a.m. to do an hour of ritual work.
This is why Crowley had to destroy the Golden Dawn.
Why?
Why? Because you guys are working too hard. He took one look at it, he's like, oh no, fuck that. This looks like a job.
we actually touched on that, me and Scotland, the other day, and what can we say? That Crowley lived a pretty remarkable life. He was he probably needed a little bit of therapy by our modern standards as a kid, probably would have helped.
We have
the benefit of that, like, you know. When I was 24, after I got divorced, I did a year of counseling just to like make sure I like sort of roughed out any edges. And then, you know, 10 years later, I did another year and it was super helpful at like making sure you're, you know, checking in like hardcore about everything.
I have releasing the benefit of
some
therapist.
Shit that you're wrong about.
I have a wonderful therapist who's an occultist who actually does magic and talks to spirits and understands a lot of that. And he's he's a therapist to several other prominent occultists in the community. And I hope that one day he publishes a book about all the crazy nut bags that he has to treat.
That would be pretty.
And all the weird shit that we put him through as our therapist.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine if Gardier was actually able to publish some of the things that he did? I was telling my therapist the other day that he's basically the Ricardier of his time, and he's like, oh my God, I hope not.
Dude, it's intense when your mind gets filled up with that shit. Like the reason in seminary that they trained us to deal with confessions, the reason is that they have to still give priest training for that is because they regularly get murder ones from Hell's Angels. That's the main one they get. So Hell's Angels come in, they've all killed someone at some point, right? So they at some point usually go confess to a priest more often than not at some point. So that's the main murder confession that clergy get to this day. Interesting, eh? You hear some messed up shit, especially from like abuse survivors and other victims.
Yeah. Like,
it's intense. And I wouldn't want to be a psychologist, man.
I don't even like reading tarot cards for people. You know, I mean...
you know what I mean? People get into some stuff that you don't necessarily want to get into.
And with the cards, it just shows all this, all of their shit. And it's like, the more you do it and the better you get at it, the more you see and the less you say, you know, it's like, I don't even read half the things I see in the cards anymore, because it's like, I don't want to go there. And I don't want to have those conversations with my clients. I mean, they're not coming to me for that. You know, I don't want to talk about what happened to them when they were eight. That's not, it's like, put that away, cards. We don't, it's not helpful. So, but now,
yeah, you don't always want to know what you can know for sure.
Well, I started offering this service where I do this like scrying thing for people to see where they're at spiritually, because people would always ask me, you know, where am I at on this scale of your initiatory system with the seven spheres? What sphere would you say I'm at? I'm like, you know, so I'd scry it and see which one vibrated the most or had the most intense response to the different archangels when I conjured them, and, you know, just to see where they were at. And I'd be like, okay, I think, you know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I started offering this service because people were asking for it all the time. So I go out and I read people's cards and talk to the spirits about them. And yeah, a lot of what I do is filtering out the things that are not appropriate for, you know, that kind of consultation and stuff. And I think that if people are in the occult are going to be doing tarot card readings and stuff like that, you know, they need to have some kind of, I don't know, counseling training or pastoral counseling, you know. Like I took some classes in pastoral counseling when I was
in
my Christian phase.
Yeah, we had to do a ton of that. And like I was already, you know, I was doing that right as I was a new adept at the temple in the Golden Dawn. So it was shocking to me how much we didn't know in the magical order world. You know, like I was like, holy shit, we could really all benefit from this information from these churches who have been doing this a very long time.
Yeah,
because on a structural level of any spiritual group, they're relatively the same as any church, right? They're people doing spirituality for the benefit of themselves and the community. Right. So on those levels,
some people who are closer to God than others,
the knowledge that we've learned translates across the board to all human communities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And the tools that you need as a pastoral counselor are going to be the same as an imperator or a tarot card reader or minister or whatever. You know, if you're gonna be poking around in people's invisible and unmanifest bullshit, then you need to know how to deal with what you find, because human beings are an incredibly crippled race of beings. You know, we're just it's amazing how many walking wounded there are. They're just, you know, got nothing but respect for people.
Yeah, cheers.
Way to get out of bed, guys. Jesus Christ. Sorry. Yeah, you missed out on an entire conversation I had there.
Yeah, sorry. I had to run to the bathroom and I'm back. La-di-da. So what do you think happens after we die? Have you got a favored thought
after
on that?
After we die?
Yeah. Where you stand on that these days?
I really like the hermetic model that says that that when you die, your flesh gets resolved to the elements and your spirit ascends, and in each of the seven spheres, you leave behind a little bit of yourself, you know, and you continue to ascend and ascend and ascend and leave behind the negative aspects of the powers of each of the spheres. So like the will to something like rambunctious power is what you leave behind in the sun. And just all the concupiscence of Venus, you know, sex for sex's sake, without there being any love or valid anything to it. You know, just all your animal nature, you leave that behind. And then you get to the eighth sphere and you get taught how to do the hymns and silence of the ninth sphere. And then you sing up in the ninth sphere, you become a power and all that stuff. I like that. I like that story. I don't think it's really what happens, but I think what happens is we die and we go through some kind of a transformative experience, you know, that's going to be programmed by our experiences in our life. And we'll have images that relate to death or relate death to what we can understand and process. And then I think what happens is the spirit or soul or eternal, whatever it is, just leaves the body and continues to hang out. Yeah. And at that point, you just enter a new phase of being. And whether it's reincarnating, like I have memories of all my past lives, not all of them, not all the time, but you know, I do remember having past lives and I remember certain aspects of them. So I believe in reincarnation.
Did you know I don't believe in reincarnation?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. Sometimes people get into a thing and I get a lot of messages about it. They're like, you know, trying to argue. I'm like, look, yeah, it's not like I don't remember my past lives. I do remember my past lives or some of them, but I just don't believe in reincarnation. That's the tension I'm in. And for probably the last 15 years, I sort of just figured, maybe the last, you know, 10 years through like my mid 20s, 30s, I just figured you were probably just lights off when you died. And then
Bodhisattva, though?
I left Maharishi behind when I was 12 and became a, you know, druid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I went deep into, you know, Celtic mysticism up until the Golden Dawn at 15.
Don't you end up having to take something like the Bodhisattva vow?
No. Well, maybe I did one of the transcendental meditation initiations, but I was 7 and 10 years old, so I don't remember. Okay. Yeah, if there was that. When I was 10, I lived in an OTO house, like Oasis, a big, huge white one on the mountain. And that was strange. The main guy was really abusive. But
when you were 10?
Yeah. Yeah. My mom was dating this guy, and his girlfriend was a AA priestess, and they were doing these OTO rituals and pathworkings in their cafe on Lower Lonsdale called Spirals. And they, you know, I was working there when I was 10, 11, 12. And like learning to make coffee and stuff, and it was all walls, black walls, and an upper stage. Then it became Bojangles years later, and they would do rituals there, I found out later. And when we left that house one stormy night at midnight with the main guy just screaming at us, you know, like telling my mom she's full of shit and her kids are full of shit and you're a bunch of pieces of shit, all this crazy fucking stuff. I later found out that that house was trafficking in large amounts of cocaine. So they were doing a lot of stuff. The main guy was sort of a sleazeball, but he wasn't really in the OTO. He just was sort of pretending to be, but his girlfriend was an AA adept. And her book, Tree of Life by Rigardi, got left mixed up in my things. And it was inscribed to her from her mentor in the AA. And so I had that on my shelf from age 10, 11 to 13. And I, you know, gone to like Kabbalistic Cross and stuff. Tatwas.
Very cool.
That's how that happened.
That's how you ended up in the Rosicrucian.
Well, after that, I did get into Amwork after that because my mom's friends were all like the people who ran it in town. They were the top people. And yeah, you know, I had to go down to San Jose to get into the adult program, get interviewed and stuff. So we did that. But it was all super lame and silly. And that's why I eventually, you know, risked going to a small Golden Dawn temple and run by Nineveh Shadrach. And, you know, that's what changed my life. Serious magicians, man. Serious fucking magicians. So like, my second class, I had to go to solo classes because I was 15 and they were worried about the influence of other adult members on me. So wait till you're 16, which is like of age in Canada. And so my solo class, like second solo class, like, go do it, start do a middle pillar and like 100 vibrations each time was 3.5 hours. And in like a yogic pose that was so fucking strenuous.
Why though?
It was amazing because afterwards I was floating. Like right. I walked out of that building. Like it was beyond anything any psychedelic, including DMT, has done to me. The state I was in, like the holy living ones.
Would you do it again?
I've done it many times. And I've led hundreds of people through stuff exactly like it for exactly that amount of time, all at once in massive temples.
There's something wrong with you, man.
Yeah.
Something seriously wrong with you. No, I'm sorry. It's not my calling. I can't do that. I think what it is, I don't have
my cat knows you're being mean to me. Come here. I'm not come here, mean. Pussy. Come on.
I'm not being mean.
Protect me, pussy.
Rawr. Oh, that is the ugliest cat.
Ruff.
Hey, I'm sorry if I'm mean to you. I'm not really meaning it.
You know what I actually found was two pictures of the old Temple of Isis, Mighty Mother's Tahuti and Isis shrine. Check those out.
Right on.
Yeah, those haven't probably been seen since it went down. Yeah, beautiful buildings we would make out of shitty ones.
Yeah, that's what the OTO does too.
Yeah, I bet. I've seen
it. Or they try. Some places are better than others.
That's the first time I ever heard of you, is you were live streaming on Facebook from the OTO temple about sophistry, right? We talked about that, I think. You were lecturing on sophistry. And I was like, that dude is wrong. I probably was,
because I don't know. I don't know jack shit about sophistry. Oh, wait, no, I do know about that.
Yeah.
Yes, I do know about that. Sorry, I thought you were thinking.
It's a chapter.
You're talking about stoicism. I'm like, I don't know if anything about stoicism. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, sophistry.
Sophistry,
well,
yes.
The sophists, your point was the sophists were not necessarily, we're not a bad philosophical group. And therefore, the word sophistry doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing, but it does mean a bad thing because it's just the origin of the name, right? Rather than, because I have a whole chapter in a new book coming out on sophistry as a very bad thing. And so this is important to me.
but sophistry is important. It's not bad. I mean,
the sophists aren't bad, but sophistry just means deception and lies, mendacity.
Right,
it's just a synonym for mendacity.
But isn't that in English? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the liar's advocate. And first of all, before I go any further, I want it to be known that I am completely against lying and all of its many ways, shapes, and forms. I support the truth and honesty in every situation. I think that if we could honestly be honest with everybody, it would honestly be a honestly better place. But I do think that there's something to be said for sophistry, for skilled mendacity as a magician.
Wouldn't you just call that moving the current? There's a nice sterile GD phrase for you.
Okay.
Just syringe out all the Crowley from your interpretation of things, brother.
Okay. All right.
No.
So you can just manipulate the current though, right? I mean.
Yeah, it's control.
It's
the magician card.
But it's sophisticated. The magician is a sophisticated.
You're moving things in ways that they should be moved. That's the difference between control and manipulation. Manipulation is moving things in ways they shouldn't be moved.
Okay.
Or don't want to be moved if they have agency.
Well, in that case, then yes, you're right. Sophistry is bad. I'm not going to argue with that. But if sophistry is just a matter of being sophisticated in your communications, then there's nothing wrong with it.
Right. Yeah. And the sophists weren't an intrinsically bad movement as far as I can recall. Yeah.
No, they just, they were. They were.
I'm not sure. Were they sort of Machiavellian?
Yeah, they were greedy bastards who used their ability to manipulate the language to basically sway the vote whichever way they wanted, which was usually for their own profit. And I might be wrong.
That sounds so unfamiliar.
Yeah, it's almost like they were the oligarchs that were running everything.
It's too bad you can't give me a parallel in modern life.
I can't think of any.
So I can know what you're talking about.
Yeah, maybe. Have you ever heard of Rufus Opus and the Seven Spheres? I'm just kidding. It feels like that though sometimes, you know, the whole imposter syndrome thing. Do you have that? You don't have that. No, you feel like you've actually worked your ass off for it, haven't you?
I don't come
at things from a very different perspective.
I don't think I don't have anything though. So I'm just being myself, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. I'm just, I don't know. Like I've got a heavy dose of that Christian sort of, you are nothing in me. Right.
Right. You know, you're the vessel that carries the water, but the water is the important thing.
Yeah. It's sort of, well, you're also like a gem that can do greater things than the greatest thing, right? But that thing that you're doing is an expression of nature and spirit. And therefore, when you're fully in line with that purity, of course you can magnify the glory of the universe. Mm-hmm. When you're in line with it, like, that's one of those things Crowley nailed. Like, you know, if you're in line with your true will, the force of the universe behind you, you're magnifying it through the gem of your being.
Yeah.
But we're all sinners, so we're not always all in line. And that's when planetary hours help.
So getting back to planetary hours.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject. I'm happy to dive into it.
It's you're only supposed to use them for making initial communication. They make initial communication with a spirit that you haven't contacted before easier. But you're maybe, right, they don't really.
Maybe they make sure you are getting the purest form of that current, like the least tinctured.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because that would really, like, you know, then going off the planetary hours, it would be like saying, well, how much mud do you want in your water? You can have water without mud, or you can have water with a little mud or a lot of mud. It's up to you. And if you're no fucking mud, please.
Well, so unless you're watering a field. If you're watering a field, a little bit of mud doesn't matter. But if you're trying to drink the glass of water, yeah, you got to be more careful.
So. Well, magic on the spot. Like, it's what I always tell people is the difference between, I really make a big deal about the difference between practicing magic and performing magic. Mm-hmm. The reason we practice is so that we can perform when the moment hits in life, and they do hit.
So can I ask you some questions about the Golden Dawn stuff, the Golden Dawn experience? All right.
Yeah.
So after Harper and I broke up, I dated Sora Mem for a little while, and I got to learn a little bit about the Golden Dawn, very little, because she was so close-mouthed about everything. She kept everything under wraps, you know.
Which order is she in?
I don't know.
With the Ciceros?
I don't think so, no.
No.
She's
not with CSS, is she?
I don't even know
what CSS is. Out of Lake Colorado?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah. She's part of the offshoot of our order.
Right. Yeah.
So those are all the top people there are still all our friends. We all get along. Everyone in that, in all of those orders gets along ever since Zink got the boot.
Yeah. I've heard that you guys are in a much better place since then. So
yeah, I think pretty much everyone's getting along. And then there's just Zink who's doing his own thing and Griffin who's, you know, masturbating in public.
But you guys have this. I don't want to talk about him.
No, me neither.
We don't mention him.
No.
But you guys have this connection in the astral realm. Like, it seems like.
It's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
It's a little bit funny. So, this feeling, like, on the astral.
So I thought for years and years that the Golden Dawn, and just bear with me here, I was wrong. But I thought the Golden Dawn was a bunch of mess,
like hokey.
I didn't know that you guys really believe that all the stuff that goes on in the astral was really real, for real. And I didn't understand that you guys are actually doing something all the time. And this is what I walked away from, you know, like, just observing somebody who is very into the magical practice of the Golden Dawn in a deep way, you know, seeing somebody actually do the practice versus seeing somebody talk about the practices on the internet is completely different. So I wanted to know if you can talk about what's the weirdest connected experience you've had with other members in the Golden Dawn, with that being plugged into that egregore that you guys seem to be janked into.
Anything in particular or specifically you're wondering?
Oh no, or just no, the just general, in general experience. Like, what's your favorite experience that you can talk about that that kind of would let other people know that there's something more to the Golden Dawn practices than the tracing of the pentagrams and the visualization of the blue lights and the, you know, like, yeah. How do you get the reality of your system across to people? Because the books have failed to express it, the reality of it. So, and it took actually seeing somebody who does it, you know, to begin to appreciate that you guys have a system that is not just living and active, but kind of comprehensive.
Yeah. You know how there's the Golden Dawn flying rolls?
Uh-huh.
And they were papers adepts wrote and passed around to each other on advanced techniques, right? And things they were trying. Well, they did that a lot in the old order. That's some of the best work that came out of it. I mean, otherwise Stephen Skinner wouldn't have even worked on it. He knows that stuff back to front, the most advanced techniques that everyone from Mathers to Yeats and Florence Farr came up with. Think about this. There's an unbroken practice in Golden Dawn temples since then, and then tons of new orders that have sprung up, and they all do that for the most part. So there's thousands of flying rolls produced over the last 100 and something years that we're all still practicing from, learning from, and studying and passing about, sometimes even across orders. And then sometimes whole orders materials get leaked and everyone gets like all this stuff, but that's still like only a large, like you master and learn everything in the published material of the Golden Dawn in that first sort of 5 to 7 years. And then you're just doing all this other stuff after that. So, you know, that's why when I talk to like, you know, Augustin Reyes or other Golden Dawn, it's like the rituals we really focus on are ones that people haven't even heard of, just the few thousand GD people that are on that path and looking for those techniques. And we're always developing further, you know, and as well as incorporating as much, you know, grimoires and Enochian is fundamental to everything, of course. Enochian and vault work, it's hard to explain to people the power of the vault. It's like, let me say this, I can tell you this. It was the only time in my entire life when I'm in the vault where I feel like everything and everyone I've ever known or imagined is all literally present next to me.
Right.
And that's why we never banish in the vault. We never do LBRPs or banishing rituals at all, ever in the vault. Right.
And when you're in the vault, you're connected to everybody in the vault.
Everything's right there. It's like you're in this matrix. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to like do much to work with energies. And the power, especially from the above and the floor and the ceiling, given what you go through within it during the initiation into 5-6, it does change you. I think I hate the idea that there's such a thing as an ontological change. I really don't like the idea that there are ontological changes like baptism and stuff like that. But if I've ever experienced an ontological change, that would have been it. Well, maybe it was just a next level epistemological one or teleological, or just, you know, I upped my vibe, leveled up. What's it called? Downloaded and leveled up. I'm sorry. I'm old. I don't know. Yeah. Right. And it literally felt ever after that, it felt like my thoughts were just heavier.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, be careful what you think about, sort of heavy.
Because it, right. That's okay. So I was trying to talk about that earlier with the authority that comes with being an imperator, with the unwanted responsibility that comes with attainment and advancement.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much a theme. I guess so. On my side, I consider the Golden Dawn practices to be really mystical, not mystical, magical, but
there's a lot of mysticism in the GD. Yeah, it's like
you guys are operating. Heavy. Okay, so I have some good friends who are Hare Krishnas, and when I got to know them after a while, I learned that when they weren't talking to me, they were repeating Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, 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 Krishna, 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 you know, and just over and over again, that was their mantra. And when they weren't talking to me, they were saying their mantra.
All the time. Inflaming themselves with prayer.
All the fucking time. And I got to see like this one guy go through the whole process of transformation as he became more and more a part of the mantra, and the mantra became more and more a part of him. And he became more himself. And like you were saying, the gem that shines the pure light through, you know, you could see him sort of relax into himself. And the Golden Dawn system seems to be like that. Like when I'm talking to people in the Golden Dawn, I'm realizing now that you guys aren't, how do I put it? Like you're always doing something on the other side of things, you know? Like, I think that gets lost in the translation. Like there's something about the Golden Dawn system where you guys are constantly in ritual in some levels, you know? You know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
Like there's something that, and nobody, like nobody, I never learned that. It never made it through my thick skull that you guys are actually doing magic right now. You know, like right now, the Golden Dawn is at work in the material world somewhat, but also in all the other realms that you guys are operating in, doing things. You know, like that part isn't communicated, that you're doing things that are keeping things going.
That's very pure and true to the Rosicrucian tradition, right? This idea that Steiner was so clearly understood with the secret stream, or the secret streams. And like, remember the fact a lot of people, Skinner says initiatory systems haven't produced many saints that we know of. Well, 99.9% of Golden Dawn initiates, of real initiates, you never hear of. Of course not. They go off into the world. They graduate Hogwarts and move on with their lives. And that's the majority of them. So they're off, you know, doing their magic, adepts of the world.
So, but you guys have community though.
Oh yeah. If you're involved in temple life or an order, it can be, you know, heavy to light. I mean, I've been out since 2004, right? 2003, 2004. And things have changed a lot, of course.
But are you really out though?
I mean, I graduated the Golden Dawn. Yeah, exactly. Right. And all my luggage is at Temple Isis Urania in England.
Yeah.
Last year, or the other year. But here's the thing. I graduated the Golden Dawn in 1999 when I went into Portal, right? The Portal of the Vault of the Adepti, the probationary grade for the Inner Order. And I was in that for a year and a half. And that was a lesson. That was a lesson, you know? But then you're graduated and it's distinctly said in the initiation that you're finished with it. So whether you get invited to the Inner Order or not, you know, most people don't. So that's, you've completed Hogwarts, as I like to think of it, because you just, you know, the material isn't that in depth. It really isn't. And a lot of it's like the Kabbalah lectures by modern standards are completely outdated in the most absurd way. Like, you want to learn modern Kabbalah, read fucking Moshe Adel, you know, don't even read Gershom Scholem because he's been disproven on most of his stuff, or a lot of it. He was still Moshe Adel's mentor really, but it, you know, we're learning more. And then we got Justin Sledge, who's like, you know, trying to remind people like, hey folks, he's a doctor, right, of these scriptures. And he's like, look, 90% of the Kabbalistic texts we have aren't even transcribed, let alone translated or published. So there's tons of information we don't have. And that's very exciting. That should excite us as magicians and scholars, as Franz Barden likes to say. Yeah. Wow. There's a lot to unearth, but also, yeah, what we focus on the Golden Dawn is going deep with our work, for sure. Like, the amount of times you lie down on a temple floor to do astral work or body of light development work or astral travels, like, and do that for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours isn't infrequent. That's more than a lot of people want to handle.
Right. So I don't do that.
Most people don't. It's insane. Why? No one should do that. It's fucking crazy, man. What the fuck? So, it's fucking what? Well, what?
All right. So that's the
you problem. Have no other life.
Most people isn't.
Well, this is just training.
Is not the target. Is not the target audience for the Golden Dawn.
But you got to remember, that's just training. You only do that for those period of years. After that, especially after 5, 6, all of that training fuses, mm-hmm. and your abilities if you go up.
If you do it, though, but I mean, it's not necessary.
No, of course not. I mean,
it's a calling. No,
any like grimoire magic takes just as much time as like inner planes work, is what I'm saying. You know, like it's not faster to go do a whole grimoire ceremony necessarily.
No, in preparation, it's not the same thing either.
No, they're very, very different.
Completely different goals, completely different intent, different results. I mean, I think ultimately I think every path contributes to the overall current that is the sum of all currents, that is the onward progression of the soul of the universe, the transmigration of the all thing, whatever. You know, I believe that at my core. It's boring though, and it's too meta for a useful conversation, in my opinion. But that said, you know, the individual magician who is working on getting laid and getting paid is not the Golden Dawn initiate who's going to sit there on the floor for 3 hours and do astral
work. That's what we're all jealous of OTO people for. They're like, damn, they get to look at naked girls every Sunday, you know, and we're like, well,
it's the naked girls are
you guys are the wild, sexy guys. We're just two wild and sexy guys.
It's a symbol, man.
Yeah,
it's
just I know. But you guys do have more fun. You have wine afterwards.
Oh, yeah. And well, I'm technically still on the outs.
I had an audience question. This is like my first or second audience question ever. Uh-oh. And yeah, they wanted to know what happened with you, and I thought we covered it, but half the time we've already talked, I was blacked out. So.
Oh, well, you know what? We should talk about that sometime.
Oh, I don't think so.
I'm jealous. Asshole.
Bitch, I'm Irish, man.
Hey,
say it enough, me. Yeah, no.
I drank hard for a long time, but you know what?
But I also didn't drink till I was 25, so that.
Well, see, yeah, I only drank that's for like four, you know four what I mean? 6 years, but I made like, up for a lot of it.
I didn't
but,
do you know, it when I was young. It makes a difference,
all this,
I think.
All this shit about blackout drinking, you know, I don't believe it.
First time I blacked out was...
I don't remember ever 26. Blacking out.
Oh, dude, that's fucking hilarious.
Prove it, man. Look, man, maybe I was just asleep.
Funny. You're so funny.
I could have just been asleep. Just because you say I did these things. Anyway, where were we? What were we talking about? Oh, what happened to me? Why you got kicked out of the OTO? Okay, so at Noticon.
You and like hundreds of other people. I was talking to my Canadian fellow friend, you know, Lilith.
Uh-huh.
You know, Lilith Zara?
Maybe.
Yeah. They're from Toronto, but they live in the States and run Thelema Tube. Which I'm able to upload videos to for some insane reason.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, but like Richard Davis, and there's a whole bunch of you got the boot, right? Which is nuts.
Not so much the boot as we went our separate ways due to philosophical differences of opinions.
Yeah,
we believe people should be nicer and kinder, and they believe that people should be respected for their authority. So it's a simplification of a lot of things. But personally, the reason I got kicked out was because I called for the disbandment of the Electoral College, one of the three branches of government in the OTO. I said that they were a bunch of basically false magicians who didn't understand how magic worked, and a bunch of cliquish old hens who weren't living up to their responsibilities and they should be disbanded. It was perfidious is the word they used, which I had to look it up to figure out what it meant. But it, basically, I was committing treason against
my order. They dropped the P word.
Yeah, perfidy.
Oh, yeah.
So I was kicked out for perfidy.
Zinc would call you up. You'd be like 7 a.m. You'd get phone calls like, Fratter, I think you're slipping back. You'd be like, huh, what? I think you're slipping back on the path.
Oh, no.
Fratter.
For perfidy?
No, he just, Zinky Poo would fuck with you and stuff like that. Yeah. Once he told me, he's like, Fratter, you need to be awake every morning. Call me 8 a.m. No sleeping in. And so I'd wake up at 8 a.m. even though I was working till 4 a.m. at this job, and call him. And then I just read Lord of the Rings till I would fall asleep around 10 for an hour. And then another adept would throw something at me and wake me up, and we'd have to start, you know, cleaning for whatever classes or rituals.
You realize that was abusive, right?
Zinc? Robert Zinc was abusive? What? No, how dare you? How dare you, sir? Ah.
It sounds like it might be a little bit abusive. It doesn't sound like fucking a healthy relationship.
He fucking put his cum in the communion wine at a Eucharist.
That's gross.
That was like...
Speaking as a Thelemite, years. That's disgusting.
Yeah, right? You know it's bad when... Oh my god. Oh my god. You know.
Our founder wrote poems about eating poop.
Yeah, right.
And so like, I still think that it's disgusting that you're
Zinc coming. Puts cum in communion wine. Crowley, colon. You're colon. Gross. Yeah. Yeah, that's the meme format they're using, right? Yeah, yeah, dude. Like that would even Crowley would be like, bro. Save it for a blowy.
He's like, I could have eaten that. Oh,
anyway. Hey, he whatever broke his limits down, right? Whatever broke his limits down, that he was very clear about that. He was always, I respect the fact that Crowley was always very clear about why he was doing a lot of things. I'm sure sometimes he just wanted to get stoned or have gay sex, but he also did purposely break boundaries for himself. It's like he was brainwashing himself to become the version of himself he wanted to be. But I not
think it was like that, you like know, that gemstone in the light thing, you know. That's I like that metaphor that you used earlier about the purifying your gem so that you can let the light through. I think he was trying to do that in his own way, but he wanted to focus the light according to his ideas of what it should be rather than just let the light form him into what it wanted him to be. So it's more of a left-hand path approach, I think, than a right-hand path. But I think that that's like the big difference between the laid and paid magician and the lodge format magician, you know, somebody who's willing to be subsumed for the greater good, you know? And that's what I was trying to get to earlier with the talking about what you guys experience as your Golden Dawn initiates, right? Is that undercurrent of being part of a greater whole that's working together consciously, intentionally, on purpose, versus these people on my side of the fence of the occult community, I think, who are sole practitioners mostly. We're single magicians who have an altar space that maybe two other magicians have seen, but nobody else has ever used. You know, I don't have a vault that I share with everybody. I don't have a set of shared practices per se. We all have similar practices, but we're not doing the same things. And there's a bunch of individuals that work together on these courses and stuff on different aspects of the occult, but we aren't combined under an oath. We aren't in agreement to use our energies for the same purpose. You know, we're all just a bunch of chaotic,
wild and crazy guys.
Yeah, basically. And it's not Thelemites either. It's people who aren't even interested in Crowley or the Golden Dawn or anything to do with any of that, who might have heard of chaos magic and maybe saw Donald Michael Craig in passing, but you know, they've cut their teeth on the Hecateon and Jason Miller's sorcery, you know, and their approach is completely.
My friend in Vancouver is doing his course right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a completely different approach. You know, I sat down with Jason Miller and BJ Swain yesterday and talked about the Holy Guardian Angel for an hour and a half.
Wow.
And it was a great conversation. We answered all these questions from people that BJ gathered, and, you know, and it was a wonderful conversation. And I realized like halfway through that, Jason Miller's approach is completely non-traditional.
His book for my birthday, Strategic Sorcery. So I've been reading it. Yeah, continue. I want to talk about this.
But he's formed an OTO lodge when he was younger. You know, he formed.
He joined one.
Still around? No, he formed it. He was one of the founding members.
He didn't say that when he was interviewed with.
I might be wrong then. He mentioned it for a little while.
He mentioned that when he joined the OTO. One of the senior members came to him and said, look, this is not your path. Like, this is not what you're going to stick with. This is a jumping off point.
Yeah, but he and I can't remember their names. I know it was, he's still there. Really good friend of mine. He tried to sponsor me and I can't remember his name. That's the name of my life. Jesus.
Remind me not to be a really good friend of yours.
I can't remember your name either. Rumpens
Rumpens Kitane.
Rumpens Kitane. Oh my god. Howard.
See?
My good friend Howard.
If only I was called Howard. If only Nineveh Shadrach had scribed my magical motto and being like, thou art known as the frater Howard.
Howard Jason and some other guy formed Thelesis together. And they're the three founding members.
Thelesis. It sounds like it's a lot like the Fare Ra name in New Zealand, like, you know, Smaragdum Thalassus.
Thelesis is one of the muses, the muse of war.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so even though he formed a lodge group organization, he never got past second degree in the OTO, and he dropped it and he moved on to pursue a individual path that he's taught other people how to use, and he calls it sorcery, but he's not, you know, he's not a traditional magician. He didn't like get initiated. He doesn't believe in Neoplatonism. He isn't a grimoire enthusiast.
I don't believe in Neoplatonism.
I'm not going to argue with you about it.
No.
You're free to be wrong.
There's no need. No, I'm an Aristotelian, brother. But more than that, we can't get into that right now. I already wrote a book on this. I wrote The Ethics.
Okay, but isn't Neoplatonism a useful metaphor?
There's useful methodologies within it, for sure.
But, and that's the extent of its value, in my opinion. And
I was finally in a safe space. I was in a safe space, okay? And that's hard. When you know, you're so fragile as me, and David Heim Smith provided me a safe space to come clean. But yeah, I usually think most things are more complex than we understand them to be. That's a common thing that I think, but I definitely like philosophically and metaphysically side with Heim Smith. But I never heard anyone else say that stuff outside of a very niche line of thinking that's similar to like certain mystical theologians in the academic world who think along the same lines as people like Umberto Eco and such, like Jacques Lacan. You know, they're thinking in semi-metaphysical terms, but not necessarily, definitely not metaphysical in the way it's been in the New Age spiritual community, but also in a high contradistinction to Platonic thought. And a lot of our thought is grounded in linguistics and the idea of, you know, that's being developed in cognitive sciences and then quantum physics, right? So we're philosophical movements open to these influxes interdisciplinarily from linguistics and quantum and cognitive science and quantum physics, because that stuff has to inform philosophy and theology. Otherwise, we're just jerking each other off.
Yeah, and it has to be a living tradition, because otherwise it's just stuck in one piece of time. But all of those models provide that useful framework, you know, like Neoplatonism yeah. might be bunk for a lot of it, but it has explanatory force in certain situations that yeah. make it easier to explain what we're going through as magicians, you know. But at the same time, quantum physics explains some pieces of it. The astral model explains a lot of what goes on. The psychological model is useful for keeping yourself in check, you know. The yeah. Spirits are real externally from yourself model. It's great for understanding some things that happen that you couldn't explain otherwise, you know. But okay, I lost my point.
you ever think about the fact, you know, how in the four worlds of the Kabbalah, right? No, I've got a million thoughts to share with you on this stuff. This is great. Uh-huh. It's awesome. Do you know how in the four worlds of the Kabbalah, there's the
thank you
formative worlds and the active worlds? If you guys aren't right. exclusive members, you can't see the video of this on magicwithoutfears.com, brought to you by our sponsor, Adrenochrome. Get 2-for-1 Adrenochrome today. Use code word Epstein. I haven't done that fake ad in a while. I like my fake ads.
I thought it was a real one. I was like, holy shit, what have I gotten myself involved with? What the fuck is Adrenochrome? I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
Did you see Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's like...
I'm like,
that's...
don't you have to get that from a...
from a tortured human child? Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, if that's their true will.
Hey, we'll do a round table. How can you even tell? We'll do a round table on Adrenochrome with you and Jeffrey Contreras and a few other.
Oh my god!
Yeah, we'll have a good time.
Were you serious about it being video only for private
content? Yeah, generally.
Oh,
that's cool. Generally what I do. It's my gimmick.
So they can't see me when I reveal all the ultimate secrets of the universe. If I were to do it on camera.
I'm already screenshotting your hands because hands are my feet.
Tell him what it was.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry.
It was his wiener.
It wasn't my wiener.
Can you imagine if this podcast? Can you imagine this podcast went like full Howard Stern?
No.
You're like, so Frater Ash and Chassan, what is your favorite breast size?
Oh my god.
you have someone like him there. With limited time to answer questions, and you like,
he's such a perfectionist that I would not be surprised.
Dude, I finally got to talk to him,
and I mean, his magical skills are incredible. I mean, his arts and craft skills, you know, the way he can put that shit together, it's such a fine attention to detail that. I imagine his preferred breast size would come with a PowerPoint presentation with an argument for why his preference was actually historically accurate and everybody else's was not.
And if you have a Kasari Fundo or knotted rope, you can do Shinkangata and Onikudaki through Gogyo and the breasts are down.
See?
Because he's a ninja.
He is a ninja.
Plus, he's like a hardcore security guard. He's a fantastic guy. Oh my god! Like I was Facebooking with him yesterday morning about Happy St. Paddy's Day because him and his scryer have such a Celtic affinity. And then later on Facebook, I see it's his birthday. I'm like, dude, we're talking for like a few minutes. And you weren't like, oh, it's also my birthday. No, of course he didn't. And so I had to, and it's like you know, Ashy Chassis. That's the problem. Now I have to like write you again and post on your wall, happy birthday, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely didn't say that to someone who could kill me with one movement, but he's so cool, man. He's so cool.
I mean, he's not
he should sell locks of his hair, like locks of his hair in little heart-shaped boxes that you can wear around your neck.
Like that long though, yeah. Because he's got
that's fine. I'll pay $100 for that. $93.99.
$93. $93.93. I don't think he would be in the OTO though. that's beneath them.
No. I mean, dude, after Richard Davis's presentation, that was sort of damning, right? Like, if the OTO can't accept what Richard Davis's argument proves, and that's on my YouTube, thanks to Chris Bennett and, well, my involvement in Crowley Mass. If you can't accept that argument, I think you're just wrong. Like, I think it was like, there's certain things in academia. I know in Pauline studies, there was a few papers that, like, you had to read them because they definitively proved things within Pauline studies, you know? Like,
are you talking about
from the Greek? Yeah, in the New Testament, like from the epistles, right? So there's certain things when you study the epistles of St. Paul and then you study the Greek of them, there's certain essays that you have to read because they definitively proved certain things. And until you read them, you're missing a lot. Like, so, things like the righteousness of Christ, right? So that can be read in two different ways. And there's an essay written that my teacher wrote, and he was a student of Karl Barth, who's a big deal in the 20s, 1920s. And he wrote an essay that proved something through the Greek about what the righteousness of Christ means. And, you know, it's like there's other essays like that in every biblical field that are definitive, and you have to read them. And that's something that, you know, that's something that the mainstream misses out on. And that's why they always say in seminary and academia, like, it's 75 years before that level of knowledge seeps out to the mainstream.
Right. And that's true in sciences too. But
yeah,
what was Richard Davis's?
Oh, it was really fascinating. Oh, if everyone needs to listen to Richard Davis's presentation at Chris Bennett's Crowley Mass. It's on my YouTube. I cut it out as my own thing because, you know, I helped host that event, and Chris is a friend of mine and I love him very much. We're in this new journal together. Do you know what this new journal that Alex is doing? Mm-mm. Okay, you're gonna get a call soon to be in this thing. It's got a great name, and Stephen Skinner's writing it, and Chris Bennett's writing it, and I'm writing it, and, like, yeah, Brian was too busy, but yeah, so yeah. Yeah, cool. We need more journals, right? Like, let's do more journals. Why not?
Sure.
Why not? Who gives a fuck, right? Like, boom. You should do a journal. Yeah. Seattle.
Maybe.
Seattle Magic.
And now, a word from our sponsors. While we cannot control whether any ads get put in the spots allocated, we thank you for listening to those that do, since they help keep this project alive. You can also get ad-free content and bonus content and videos and a private webpage by subscribing exclusively to magicwithoutfears.com for only a couple dollars a week, or $6 a month, or $50 for the year. It helps a lot, plus you get emails about other exclusive things. Thank you very much.
Well,
and a picture of you with a bow and arrow.
I don't think I'm going to be the one that is in any pictures.
You're not going to be firing any shots?
No. I know a model, though.
Dude, I dated a model in 2011. And then she went on to date.
No, Nicole, my girlfriend, is a model.
Yeah, I know. I know. I did a model I was engaged to a model in 2011. She went on to be with a guy I knew from high school who was the keyboardist in Frontline Assembly and good friend of, I don't want to say the name, but Marco Visconti, and they were a good friend. And my ex-fiance 4 years later led to that Frontline Assembly keyboardist's death. That's how toxic this model was. So watch out, man. But I'm sure Nicole's awesome.
Nicole's awesome. Yeah. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And also, yeah. Marco, huh?
Well, you know, I talked to him. He's on my website.
I don't know. I don't know anything about Marco. So,
hey, you know, I was talking to,
I heard he has a cool DJ once.
I was talking to Taliesin McKnight, and I don't really know anything about him, but he crossed my path, and I was like, look, hey, I know he was under his real name. So, but I was like, I know you thought about bringing back your YouTube channel, this guy. And I was like, if you ever want to do a podcast and, like, tell your story, like, cause I know shit went down with Taliesin McKnight and his whole YouTube channel and his life. And then I've heard a bunch of things, but I said to him, like, when we crossed paths, I was like, hey, if you ever need a place to come tell your story, come talk for 3 or 4 hours, right? Like, this is, I think we need a place as occultists that are like, Well, I'm a very Christian dude, right? Like, so I'm all about like, we're sinners. We all need to be forgiven. Yeah. Like I'm very vague on the idea that like, we're all fucking sinners and we all need to be constantly forgiven. Not seven times, not 77 times, not 777 times, fucking every time. I think we need like, that is anti-cancel culture, really.
You're not going to make any friends pointing out that Christians are right about something.
But dude, I'm a fucking Christian priest, so like, you know.
I know, but it doesn't
people don't like me reminding them of that. Yeah, but then again, like, you know, I spend time each week counseling Episcopal clergymen.
Well, so
in how to do Solomonic magic.
I don't think you're wrong. Okay, I don't think you're wrong in any of that. But I don't think that the culture is ready to accept enlightenment. I don't think that they can handle it. I don't think they can handle forgiveness.
Jason Liu said on Midnight Gospel, enlightenment is the starting point in hermetic, in hermeticism.
It is. It really is. And the idea that Christianity has something good to offer modern occultists without there being anything at risk to them as magicians or spiritual beings or fine upright citizens, you know, it's anathema to them to even consider Christianity as anything more than something evil. And it's
like, that's not my world, right?
Well, it's not reality. You know, it's like, well,
people in the Rudolf Steiner Golden Dawn world, like Jesus is a big part of it, right? But we interpret Jesus like as Yeheshua, right? Like the great magic, we were talking about the Golden Dawn current, right? The Golden Dawn current is in Yeheshua Mihi Omnia, right? That is the Golden Dawn current, right? And that is Osiris, right? And it's yet Yeheshua, which is the five elements united. So nature uniting through spirit. And that loose theology is incredibly syncretistic between Jewish, Christian, and Egyptian, right? Mm-hmm. And it's only recently we're starting to understand the full scope of its earlier antecedent in Assyria. Mm-hmm. And then the ways it's been transmitted since that Judeo-Christian origin is quite well documented. We know that quite well.
And even before that, in the Hellenistic, you know, under Alexander the Great. It was all the Derveni papyrus is something I've been going on and on about lately, but it talks about the Zeus is all in all, and very much all the elements are working there in union for according to the plan of the infinite deity. Anyway, it's very much in keeping with the Rosicrucian current.
Yeah, well, especially when you remember that Jesus is literally Horus, mm-hmm. right? You know, intentionally and directly extracted, Isis and Horus, Mary and Jesus. It didn't go through some transliteration. It's a one for one adaptation, and even Christian theologians are not confused about that. Fucking in seminary, they told it to us straight up. Right?
Yeah.
You know, there's Roman Catholics in the seminary. There's Unitarian Universalists, but there's also Roman Catholics because it's all academic, right? These are professors who care about validly getting published in the religion journals, you know? So they can't be full of shit. This is not some evangelical conservative shit. Is fucking scholarship,
but you know,
best shit is scholarship.
The best shit is scholarship. But you know, even if you can understand the ideas of Christianity and understand the ideas of Neoplatonism or whatever, if you can understand the ideas of it, great. But so what if you can't apply things like forgiveness? You know, if you can't accept the idea of forgiveness because it's something that the Christians taught, then you're in no way you're going to be able to actually forgive someone. You know, you can't even forgive an idea. How can you forgive another human being? It's like, I don't know. The occult community just isn't ready for that level of applied hermetic truth, in my opinion.
It's why a lot of the orders, like, they're like, you know, only Gargamel advertises, you know. No, the rest are either under-advertised or, like, you know, some of them don't even have websites. Like, that's why I'm saying Scotland instead of a name. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, like, they leave us alone. And God bless them. Like, God bless them, right? Because, like, if you were nearby, probably you'd hook up with them, right? I mean, if they were in my town or your town, if they're, you know, well, there are good groups in my town, but, like, you want to work with other magicians. I was going to say musicians, but yeah. I mean, both. I'm so starved for music. That's why I live streamed Upside Down last night. Anyway, like, that's why I love what's happening in our sphere, because we're all independent people, like you, me, Jason. There's a bunch of us who are independent. And the more we work together, we can actually set a good example for the orders.
I think so. And the order needs to catch up. And it's not just the orders, it's also the individuals who are young and not young, but, you know, new to the process of self-transformation and everything that resembles it, you know?
Yeah.
So
one of the reasons I don't care about what order someone is in is because if the more groups that train just well-trained magicians, that's more people we can interact with and work with, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care how you became a fucking plumber. I just want to know, can you fucking plumb?
Can you fix the fucking pipes?
If you can fix the pipes, then we can work together. If you don't actually know what you're doing, we can't work together. Like, I have zero doubt. You, me, Tony, Steven, Brian, Aaron, any of us could get together with fucking throwing Strat and Kent, right? You know, he'd probably like put on the right Zeppelin album. We'd all take acid and just have the best magical experience ever. But, like, you know, we could all work together. Anyone who really does know their shit, it's really easy to work with them. I've noticed this across traditions. So don't worry so much about which Hogwarts you go to. Just fucking get trained up or do a one-on-one method, which is the AAA style anyway. It's the old grimoire style, as master apprentice anyway. So, like, go do that. But learn it all, at least the basics. Get your fucking black belt, because then we can all get together and work together. And that's where it's really magical, right? You know, you go to a place, do a bunch of crazy ritual work, do a bunch of lectures, have a campfire, sing Kumbaya, and go home. Why can't we fill our lives with that? We fucking can. And it wouldn't be long, actually. If we give a shit, I think degrees are stupid. I think they're so fucking stupid. But, like, anyone with a degree can give credits, and there's a new wave of education happening. Mystery schools are on the comeback, you know? Like,
yeah.
Wouter Honegraaff from the University of Amsterdam argued that the religious studies department rename itself spirituality. He couldn't literally say that, but we all know that's what he was saying. Like, he wrote an entire essay in the main religion academic journal called Religion, arguing that basically religious studies departments changed their name to spirituality studies worldwide. That would be a game changer, right? For the average normie going into college, but he never actually literally said that. So you can imagine the verbiage necessary in an academic journal essay to say everything but that. But that's what he was saying, and we all know it. Rename religious studies spirituality studies. Just fucking do it. Fucking do it. But in the meantime, the rest of us in the more occult spheres can build our networks and cross promote, affiliate, and interact and build up just serious magicians that are capable of going into a serious ritual setting and working together, and then sing Kumbaya. You know, you have to sing.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I think we're all singing Kumbaya to ourselves in our hymns of silence in the eighth sphere or something. I don't know. But hey, man, I've had a great time talking to you, but I gotta jump.
Yeah, brother.
All right, it's 9:30 my time, so.
You old man.
Yeah. I've got things I must attend to.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always great to talk to you. We can pick up where we left off next time.
Bye, Joshy. I love you.
See you later, bear.
All right, man.
All right.
Peace and love.
Hermetic Science Enterprises is a publishing company based in Scotland, UK, that specializes in Western esoteric printed literature as well as educational videos. With various imprints under its belt, its roster consists of grimoire tradition literature, alchemical works, Golden Dawn tradition books, and the several texts and videos originally belonging to the philosophers of nature. Besides its downloadable videos and standard hardcover edition books, Hermetic Science Enterprises also produces beautiful and precious limited fine edition books that are true pieces of art. For more information to order any of its products, please visit www.hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk. That's hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk. And as a lot of you know, I've talked with the publisher Lenny on the podcast before, including a six-hour epic extended version on the Patreon, and seen the fine edition of his new grimoire of Scott's Discovery of Witchcraft, which is only available for purchase up to 50 limited copies till the end of May, I believe. So check it out now. HermeticScienceEnterprises.co.uk.